But Exodus, the second one, should be able to find that. Exodus chapter 6.
Imagine what it was like before they put in the chapter and verse stuff. I mean, that didn't happen until the Middle Ages. Before that, it was just turned to Isaiah, and it was just one run-on, you know, honking letter. How would you find anything? You'd know it. That's how you'd find it, I guess. You wouldn't be lazy and use a chapter and verse like we do, but Exodus chapter 6. Now, if you've been here going on, what's happened is Israel as a nation has been in Egypt for 400-plus years. They're slaves. Moses has come on the scene through a series of events, ended up being adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, the leader of Egypt's daughter, but left that to become Israel's deliverer, but did it in his own strength, killed somebody, got run out of town, went away for 40 years in the backside of the desert, watching someone else's sheep. The Lord appears to him and says, now it's time, I'm going to use you to get my people out of Egypt. And Moses went through the, I can't speak, you should get somebody else, maybe a different person, I'm no good. You know, he went through all the excuses, and God, no, it's you. Finally agreed, okay, you can't talk. And he said, well, who made man's mouth? But no, you can't talk, fine, I'll bring your brother, is that all right? I'll bring your brother Aaron, you haven't seen him in a while. And so the two of them go back to Israel. The Lord had given them a few signs. They could take his staff, throw it down, it would turn into a snake. He could take his hand, put it in his shirt, pull it out, it'd be covered with leprosy, put it back in, pull it out, it'd be clean again. To convince the leaders of Israel that he was really going to be their deliverer, he goes back, they believe him. He goes to Pharaoh, says, let my people go. Pharaoh says, I don't think so. In fact, apparently you have too much time on your hands if you think you can go out in the desert, out in the wilderness and worship. So we're just going to increase your workload. Now you have to gather your own straw in your, you know, your quota of bricks doesn't change. And so the people cried out. They asked Pharaoh to stop. They yelled at Moses. And in the end of chapter 5, verse 22, it says, Moses returned unto the Lord, and he said, Lord, wherefore hast thou so evilly entreated this people? Why is it that you've sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people, neither have you delivered your people at all. He says, God, what are you doing? You sent me there. I said what you wanted to say. And it just made things worse. Now Pharaoh won't let him go, and it's worse for everybody. Everybody's crying out. And that's exactly what the Lord intended. We come to chapter 6, and it says, then the Lord said unto Moses, now you shall see what I will do. He has made it evil. Well, let me show you what I'm going to do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand shall he let them go, and with a strong hand shall he drive them out of this land. Oh, no, he's not letting them go now, but I'll tell you what, when I am done with this guy, not only will he let them go, he will drive them out. He will change his tune. And again, I think I mentioned last week, part of the reason why he allowed it to get so bad is when they are delivered out of that, he doesn't want them looking back thinking, no, it wasn't that bad. You know, I mean, yeah, they were beating us and throwing our children in the Nile, but the food was good. And of course, that's what they end up doing anyways. But God wants to make bondage and captivity so bitter that when you finally are free of it, there's no desire to go back. And of course, sometimes that's what has to happen to us. I mean, some of you who are older, you have kids that are knuckleheads or they've gone off the deep end and living like heathens. And you want to, they do things that are stupid and going to cause them pain. We've all done things that are stupid and cause us pain. And as a parent, you want to say, I'll pay your fine. I'll protect you from, and we want to protect them from some of the consequences of their choices. But the truth is, if we're always softening the blow, then they might never get sick of it. Sometimes you need to take a big old bite of that sandwich to get good and sick. You know, something I would recommend as parenting advice. I'm just telling you the story. But when I was a kid, my neighbor, a friend of mine, his father caught him smoking and said, oh, you want to smoke? And so he bought him a pack of, you know, those Swisher sweets and took them out in the shed and shut the door and said, you're not coming out till you've smoked every one of them. And after he was violently ill, he didn't have a taste for those anymore. It's, you know, and sometimes God allows you and I, and, you know, he warns us, I've set before you, you know, blessing and cursing, life and death. Now choose life. But if you go the other way, sometimes you have to have a bite of it. And I think the Lord is prepping his people. And now he's got them. He says, okay, now that it's been very clear that he is resisting me, now check out what I'm going to do. It says verse 2, and God spake unto Moses and said unto him, I'm the Lord. And I appeared unto Abraham and to Isaac, unto Jacob, by the name of God Almighty. But by my name, Jehovah, was I not known to them.
And I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage wherein they were strangers. And God says, you know what? Not only, they haven't known me like you're going to know me, Moses. You're going to know me in a different way than they ever knew me, because you're going to see my power. You're going to see my provision. And I'm going to keep my promise. I made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob 400 plus years ago. And it's for a piece of real estate. And God's real clear. That's his piece of real estate. And he gave it to them. So he says, I'm going to give them that land. I've also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, whom the Egyptians keep in bondage. And I've remembered my covenant. Now, as we go through these next couple verses, notice the I wills in all of this. All right, God is very clear about what he's going to do. And notice what Israel's part in this is. It's no part. It's to be a passive recipient. This is nothing on them. God says, wherefore, say unto the children of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rid you out of their bondage. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. I will take you to me for a people. I will be to you a God, which personally, as a side note, one of the most amazing things, I think. It's merciful enough that he would actually, you know, rescue them, or that he would rescue us. You look at Christ and him dying for us. That's amazing. But to allow me to say, yeah, I'm a follower of Jesus, I'm a Christian. I mean, all I can think of is that scene from like one of the best movies of all time, The Incredibles. Have you seen that? When there's that little kid, I'm not affiliated with him. I'm not affiliated. You know, he's got this little knuckleheaded kid that's trying to be like him. And I sometimes I would think God would want to say, I'm not affiliated with him. He does not represent me. I know he claims to be mine. And yeah, I set him free. But no, he's not. No, he willingly wants to be identified with us. Like, yeah, that's my kid. Steve's my kid. Jeremy's my kid. Joel's my, Kimmy's my. I mean, he really wants to be identified with us. He says, and I will be to you a God. You shall know that I'm the Lord your God, which brings you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I'll bring you into the land concerning which I did swear to give it to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob. I will give it to you for a heritage. I'm the Lord. And Moses spake unto the children of Israel. He goes back with this great news and tells them, look, the Lord said this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. It says, but they hearken not unto Moses for anguish of spirit and for cruel bondage. They were in a hard way, and they just couldn't. There are promises of God that are great promises, and they're true promises, but sometimes you just can't handle them, you know, especially when you're in the middle of something and it's really bad. Sometimes the best thing to do is to just, you know, go and listen to someone or put your arm around them or cry with them or whatever the case is. They were not in the place where they had the strength to even believe what God was going to say. But that didn't change what he was going to do. The Lord spake to Moses, saying, go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. And Moses spake before the Lord, saying, behold, the children of Israel haven't listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me, whom of uncircumcised lips? I can't even talk. Your own people won't listen to me. If they won't listen to me, do you really think Pharaoh's going to listen to me? And the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, and he gave them a charge. That's King James, for he told them a command to the children of Israel, unto Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land. I don't care. I'm glad that you feel that way. Thank you for sharing. Now go do what I told you to do. And then he answers the question for the next few verses, and we're not going to dwell on these so much. The question of who is Moses anyway? Who's Moses? Because if you ever go on a job interview and they sit you down and they say, well, tell me about yourself, Steve. And then you get to open your mouth and say, well, oh, I like this, or I don't like that, or I'm really fond of this, or I've got talents in this area, or I'm horrible at that. And you tell him about who you are. In this culture, you say, well, tell me about yourself, Moses. And he'll still go back and tell you his family tree so that you know what family he's from, what tribe he's from, where he was growing up from. And that's what we see here to identify who Moses is. He starts with Jacob's boys. He's going to do Reuben, he's going to do Simeon, and then he's going to go to Levi, which is the third one, and then he's not going to go through the rest because Levi is the one that Moses and Aaron come from. He says, these be the heads of their father's houses, the sons of Reuben, firstborn of Israel, Hanok, Palu, Hezron, and some other names. The sons of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, it's my boy Jamin, he's a musician, and Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanitish woman. Oh, yeah, that's right. He came from he came from Simeon's other way. He married that weird woman, the Canaanitish one. Yeah, that's where Shaul, I mean, that's what they're telling you. Shaul came from one of the Canaanites. And these are the names of the sons of Levi according to their generations: Gershon, Kohath, Merari. Now, these guys are going to come back into play because this is the family that becomes the ones who bear the tabernacle, who take care of the priestly things and all of that. These three families, in the years of the life of Levi, were 137 years. That's a good long life, 137 years old. The sons of Gershon, Libni, Shimei, according to their families. The sons of Kohath, Amram. Now, this is going to be Moses' granddaddy, so that's why he's coming in. Amram, Izhar, Hebron, Uziel. The years of the life of Kohath were 133 years. And the sons of Merari, Mahli and Mushi. Haven't heard too many Mushis. A lot of Megans, a lot of Caitlins. Not many Mushis. In verse 20, Amram took Jochebed, his father's sister, to wife. Ew, right? I mean, he married his aunt, that's what it's saying. But this is early on. The gene pool hasn't been as corrupted as it is now, so the prohibitions against, you know, some of the intermarrying stuff. And also, I mean, married my aunt a lot of times with families, just because these guys live to be 130, 140 years old, and you can have kids for a long period of time in there. So just because she's your aunt doesn't mean that she's older than you. You could actually be older than her just because of the generations and stuff. But Amram and Jochebed, that's Moses' mother and dad. Sons of Izhar, verse 21. Sons of Uziel, verse 22, 23. Aaron took him Elisheba, daughter of Aminadab, sister of Nahashon, to wife, and she bare him Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. Those people are going to come into play because they're the sons of Aaron the priest. Now, in Old Testament times, you didn't join the priesthood. You didn't go to seminary to become a priest. You had to be born it. It was a family thing. So it was the sons of Aaron. So these guys are going to be the priests after him and their descendants. Sons of Korah, some of those are listed. Verse 25, some of Eleazar's kids. Verse 26, these are that Aaron and Moses to whom the Lord said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their armies. These are Aaron and Moses. Doom, doom. I mean, wasn't that like almost spiritual or something? And these are they which spake to Pharaoh, verse 27, king of Egypt, to bring out the children of Israel from Egypt. These are that Moses and Aaron. And it came to pass in the day when the Lord spake unto Moses in the land of Egypt, the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I am the Lord, speak thou unto the Pharaoh, king of Egypt, all that I say thee. And Moses said before the Lord, behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. He's back to making excuses again. How shall Pharaoh hearken unto me? And the Lord said to Moses, chapter 7, see, I have made you a god to Pharaoh, and Aaron, thy brother, shall be thy prophet. Now, when he went to him before and said, the God of, you know, the Israel says, let my people go, he says, who's the God of the Israels? I don't know him. Why should I listen to him? He's a god of slaves. Why would I even care about that? And now God is saying to Moses, okay, he didn't want to deal with me, then I'm going to make you look like a god to him, and Aaron is going to be your prophet, and that he's going to speak for you. You shall speak all that I command you. That doesn't mean you have free rein to go run your mouth. You're only going to say what I say. And Aaron, your brother, shall speak unto Pharaoh that he send the children of Israel out of his land. Notice verse 3, I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. Truthfully, God could have started with the last sign, smoked the firstborn children, and they'd have been driven out of there. But he didn't do that. He said, no, we're going to do it this way. I'm going to show myself to my people here and to them. We'll see what it says. But Pharaoh shall not hearken unto you, he won't listen, that I may lay my hand upon Egypt and bring forth my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt by great judgments, and the Egyptians shall know that I'm Lord, when I stretch forth my hand upon Egypt to bring out the children of Israel from among them. See, when we get ready to do this, he says, by the time I'm done, not only will he know that I'm who I am, they're all going to know who I am. In fact, some of them, when they end up leaving, some of the Egyptians go with the Israelites because they're like, man, the God you follow is a real God. The reason why is all of these plagues that are going to come are shots at the Egyptian gods. They worshipped everything. And every one of these plagues that happens, and I'll tell you some of the ones as we go through it, are direct attacks on what the Egyptians worshipped.
And see, I don't, the Bible says God's the same yesterday, today, and forever, right? So that means in the Old Testament times, if people took something and they held it up as being something worthy of worship or devotion to, God would go after those things and say, oh, really? You think that's, well, you want it? Let me give you so much of it, it makes you sick. He's going to do the same thing then. He does the same thing to us. And sometimes you can see that happening. People take something, whether it's a substance, a relationship, or some other thing other than God, put it in his place in their life, and God says, oh, you really want to go after that, do you? Then let's go after it, and I'll show you how powerless it is and how at the end of the day it's only a plague to you. In chapter 12 of Exodus, he's going to say before the last plague in verse 12, I'll pass through the land of Egypt this night and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And he says, and against all the gods of Egypt will I execute judgment. In Numbers 33, it says, the Egyptians buried all their firstborn, which the Lord had smitten among them. Upon their gods also the Lord executed judgments. He was taking a shot. Now, it's amazing to me is after that, and after the Israelites see that the Egyptians' gods are powerless, and they're led out of Egypt into the wilderness, a few days later they're making a golden calf and bowing down to a golden calf. It's crazy. But it says Moses and Aaron did in verse 6 as the Lord commanded. Moses was 80, that's 80 years old, and Aaron was 83 years old when they spoke unto Pharaoh. That seems a little late to put them into play, right? 80? Well, you're 80. Now you've finally grown up enough. I can use you. Good, let's go to work. But truthfully, Moses is going to live to be 120, and it tells us when he died that his vision wasn't dimmed and his strength hadn't ebbed. But so if you live to be 120 in your doing this at 80, if the normal lifespan of what's the normal lifespan of an American now? 80, 75, 80, not, I don't know. But if it's 80, then it's 2/3 of that. So you're, 50-ish, 40s, 50. So that, if you're 80 now, 50 doesn't sound that bad. You could do some stuff at 50. So that's where he is. The Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron, saying, when Pharaoh shall speak unto you, saying, show a miracle for you, then you'll say to Aaron, take your rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and it shall become a serpent. Now, this was told to him, this was going to be a sign so you can convince the Israelites. And that's where he did the whole snake thing. Moses did it. Now he's saying, you're going to say to Aaron, take the rod and throw it down. I read this time, and I'm like, really? I guess I just pictured Moses throwing his stick down, but God just said, no, you tell Aaron, and Aaron will throw the staff down. Moses and Aaron went in unto Pharaoh. They did as the Lord commanded, and Aaron cast down his rod before Pharaoh and before his servants, and it became a serpent. Now, this is starting towards the Egyptian gods. Any of you guys must have seen at least pictures, the National Geographic pictures of King Tut's, all his stuff. You can picture the gold thing, right? You got the big gold headdress, and what's right on the top of his headdress? It's a snake. It's a cobra, actually. It represents one of their gods called Wajet, which was the god of Lower Egypt. The whole thing together is with the snake in that particular pose, like it's getting ready to strike, is called a uraeus. And so even in the beginning, he throws down his staff, and it turns into the thing that represents Pharaoh's power. Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, verse 11, now the magicians of Egypt. They also did in like manner with their enchantment. So the wise men, the sorcerers, the magicians, they show up and they do the same thing. It says, for they cast down every man his rod. Now, every man, how many are there? I mean, we tend to think of just two, but was it two? Was it four? Was it six? Was there a dozen guys? And they're all like clack, clack, clack. They're throwing their staffs down, and then the whole thing just turns into this pit of snakes. And they all became serpents. But Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. How many snakes did that one snake eat? That's what I want to know. Because he just starts, it says small, all of their rods, plural. So at least two. I would think two would be a good meal for a snake, but apparently it eats them all. And then Aaron grabs it by his tail and picks it back up. That's supernatural. Does that kind of stuff really happen? It did. There is supernatural stuff that happens. It does. There's only two sources of power in the universe. There's God, and then there's the limited power that he has allowed his enemy to have, who does do some supernatural things from time to time. This was one of them. to believe in the Bible, you have to believe in the supernatural. And it's especially obvious when you go through the book of Exodus, because there are a lot of people who want to find reasons for what happened, like the parting of the Red Sea. Well, there was actually a phenomenon where, you know, it was really pretty shallow and then the wind would blow. And so it was, they actually went through the mud, see, and it's like, in order to not have to deal with the miracle, they ignore the miracle of him parting the sea, even though the Bible says it was like a wall of water that they walked through. And instead, they come to another miracle, which is the whole Egyptian army could drown in a couple inches of water. So, but truthfully, this is supernatural. If you have a problem with the supernatural, you're going to have a problem with the Bible. Jesus did all kinds of supernatural stuff. This happens. Now, just because something is supernatural doesn't mean it's of God. In Deuteronomy 13, they're told very plainly, if someone comes along and they tell you, hey, let's go worship another god, but they do some miracle or they say something's going to come to pass and it does, I don't care. Don't listen to them. Get rid of them, because they're trying to lead you astray. In the New Testament, Thessalonians, it says that the Antichrist will have all lying signs and wonders. And I mentioned that this morning. This, our nation is primed to receive somebody who can do something supernatural. Well, Aaron's rods gobble up these guys, but he hardened Pharaoh's heart. Now, he's just confirming what Pharaoh had already said. He doesn't want to let them go. And even though that seems to be a pretty obvious sign, when you all throw down snakes and one of the snakes eats all of the other snakes and then becomes a staff again, maybe you should think, he's got something that my guys don't have. But no, the Lord hardens his heart, and he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. And the Lord said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart's hardened. He refuses to let the people go. So we go to the next round, verse 15. Get thee unto Pharaoh in the morning. Lo, he goes out under the water. He's heading for the Nile. He could be going there to take a bath. He could be there to worship in some way. Not really sure, because they worship the Nile. And you shall stand by the river's brink against he come. And the rod which was turned to a serpent shall you take in your hand. And you'll say unto him, the Lord God of the Hebrews has sent me unto thee, saying, let my people go, that they may serve me in the wilderness. And behold, hitherto you wouldn't hear. Thus saith the Lord, In this thou shalt know that I am the Lord. Behold, I'll smite with the rod that's in mine hand upon the waters which are in the river, and they shall be turned to blood. And the fish that's in the river shall die, the river shall stink, and the Egyptians shall loathe to drink the water of the river. Now, they worshipped, they had one god called Khnum, K-H-N-U-M, Khnum, that seems like, that's worse than mushy in my mind. Khnum was the guardian of the Nile. You had Hapi, which was the spirit of the Nile, and then they said that the Nile was actually the bloodstream of Osiris. So they lived off the Nile. The Nile would flood every year, and the water from the Nile would make their land bring forth crops. I even have, and I won't sing it to you because I don't know the tune, but here's a translation of from 2100 BCE, a hymn to the Nile that, you know, hail to the Nile. And it's basically a worship tune for the Nile, including one verse down in here that I thought was kind of interesting, where it talks about the Nile being like incense to them. So God's saying, oh, you worship the Nile, it's like incense to you? Well, I'll give you some incense. How about I make everything in it die? I turn the water to blood. You ever smell blood? Day or two later, blood? You know what happens to meat that's got blood in it that starts going bad? Smells bad. That's why when we die, we go to the embalmer and they take the blood out and they put other stuff in, because otherwise it smells bad. Well, imagine a river full of blood, and not just the river, all the water. It says, the Lord spake to Moses, saying, Aaron, take your rod, stretch out your hand upon the waters. This is verse 19 of Egypt, upon their streams, upon their rivers, upon their ponds, upon their pools of water, that they may become blood, that there may be blood throughout the land of Egypt, both in vessels of wood and vessels of stone. Even the water you got bottled back at the house. You come home, you grab your great value bottled water, and it's red. I mean, everything's blood. Can you imagine? Blood. Everything that you thought was life to you is now death. Moses and Aaron did so as the Lord commanded. He lifted up the rod. He smote the waters that were in the river in the sight of Pharaoh, in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood. The fish that were in the river died. Dead fish in blood. What's that smell like? Bad. That's what it smells like. That's why it says, the river stank. It
stank. Behold, it stinketh. And the Egyptians could not drink the water of the river, and there was blood throughout all the land of Egypt.
Wouldn't you think at this point, people are starting to think, there's something going on here. I mean, this guy, maybe we should let him go. Did you ever think? I mean, because we really need water. Without water, we're going to have a problem. And it was a testimony of the Egyptians. And as I said, some of them will turn to follow God by the time this is over. Interesting thing is, in Revelation 16, you see the tribulation period, the last 7 years before the Lord finally returns with his church and sets up his kingdom. And it says, the third angel poured out his vial upon the rivers and the fountains of waters, and they became blood. And I heard the angel of the waters say, thou art righteous, O Lord, which art, which was, which shall be, because thou hast judged thus. For they have shed the blood of the saints and the prophets, and you've given them blood to drink, for they are worthy. And part of their sacrificing, if they're making sacrifices and putting blood into the Nile in order to worship their gods, God says, okay, we can do that. If that's what you want, let's have a mouthful. And he turns all the water in the land to blood. But thankfully, there was a little water, apparently, that wasn't turned to blood, because it says the magicians of Egypt did so with their enchantments. We got a little water left. That's okay, Pharaoh. We can make that blood too. Abracadabra. Great, thanks. You know, that's what I needed, was more blood. It's not like everything isn't blood, but you can give me more blood. That's very helpful. And that's how these guys are. You got snake problem, they'll give you some more snakes. You got a blood problem, they'll give you more blood. In a minute, you're going to have, the frogs. You got frog problem, they'll give you more frogs. That's all they do. They can't help. They can only make the problem worse. But he hardened his heart. He didn't listen unto them, as the Lord had said. Pharaoh turned, went into his house, neither did he set his heart to this also. And all the Egyptians digged round the river for water to drink, for they could not drink of the water of the river. 7 days were fulfilled after that the Lord had smitten the river. 7 days of blood and dead fish. Nasty. And the Lord spake unto Moses, go to Pharaoh and say unto him, thus saith the Lord, let my people go, that they may serve me. And if you refuse to let them go, behold, I'll smite all your borders with frogs. And the river shall bring forth frogs abundantly, which shall go up and come into your house and into your bedchamber and upon your bed and into the house of your servants and upon your people and into your oven and into your kneading troughs. And the frogs shall come up both on thee and upon thy people and upon all thy servants. Now another of their gods or goddesses was Heket. And you've probably seen it, kind of looks like a frog person, frog-headed woman. She represents life and fertility because, you know, when the frogs hatch out, there are a lot of frogs, right? So we'll worship the symbol of fertility. And so God says, okay, we can go after that one. I'm not a big frog fan. I mean, I caught my share of frogs when I was a kid, but I never really like handling frogs. They're kind of clammy and froggy, you know? But it's one thing to have a couple frogs. It's another thing to sleep on frogs and take a bite of Cheerios swimming with frogs and have frog in your bath and frog in your hair and frog in your children and frog everywhere. I mean, you get up at night to stumble to the bathroom and you're stepping on frogs. It's just not cool. But it says, well, the Lord spake to Moses, saying to Aaron, stretch forth your hand with your rod over the streams, over the rivers, over the ponds, cause the frogs to come up upon the land of Egypt. And Aaron stretched out his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up, and he covered the land of Egypt. And the magicians did so with their enchantments and brought up frogs upon the land of Egypt. We can call some more if that's what you need, Pharaoh. Here, froggy, froggy, poof, and now more frogs. Thank you. Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron, and he said, entreat the Lord. Who? Oh, wait a minute. You said who was the Lord earlier. You don't even know his name. Now you know him by name. That's nice. Okay. What would you like me to ask him for you? Entreat the Lord that he may take away the frogs for me and my people, and I'll let the people go that they may do sacrifice unto the Lord. And Moses said unto Pharaoh, glory over me. When shall I entreat for thee and for your servants and for thy people to destroy the frogs from thee and thy houses that they may remain in the river only? Hey, you just say the word. Tell me, really, you want them gone? No problem. When would you like it to happen? Just so we're clear that all of this is your choice and this is happening on your timetable and all you have to do is let us go. You want them gone? All you have to do is ask me. I'll ask the Lord. When do you want them gone? And he said, tomorrow.
And he said, well, be it according to your word, that you may know that there is none like unto the Lord our God.
The thing is, I think he's expecting that they'll go away. You know, he says, the frog shall depart from thee and from thy house and from thy servants and from thy people, and they shall remain in the river only.
Moses and Aaron went out from Pharaoh. Moses cried unto the Lord because of the frogs which he'd brought against Pharaoh.
And the Lord did according to the word of Moses, and the frogs died out of the houses, out of the villages, and out of the fields. And they gathered them together upon heaps, and the land stank.
You know what dead stuff smells like? You ever have like a mouse die in the wall? It used to happen to us in Springfield when we lived out there all the time. It'd be in my closet. I don't know what the deal was, but one of them would die down in the wall. And you'd go in the closet, and it would be that smell of death. And you couldn't get at it. It's behind the sheetrock. And you got to wait like a week or more before that really goes away.
Imagine millions and millions of frogs dying. And they're in everything in your house. So then they all die. They all croak. And then, that was funny. You're supposed to work with me here. That. And now they're stinking up the place. I think we missed one, you know, because they're all through the house. So they all die. A couple more verses. So Pharaoh said, if you just get rid of the frogs, I will let them go. So he gets rid of the frogs, and he doesn't let them go. Pharaoh saw that there was respite. That word respite, it means a breath or breathing room. Once he saw that he could catch his breath, he hardened his heart and he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. And see, this is what people do, all right? They get in a bad way and they cry out to the Lord. Oh God, get me out of this one. I'll do anything. I'll go to church every week. Oh God, just hear me, you know. And then he actually does it and they get out of it. Whew. Yeah, next week I'll be there first thing. Next week I'll, I probably would have got out of it anyway. So, and they harden their heart and they forget. They cry out to God. I remember, it was back in the days when I was working in children's ministry down in Bangor, and I taught on Sunday nights, or Wednesday nights too. I think I did Wednesday nights, the older kids. It was after September 11th, right after the planes hit the towers. And all of a sudden, it got really, really full, like really, really full. Like everybody thought, oh no, this is the end of the world. I got to go get right with Jesus. And the place is packed. I mean, we got kids coming out of our ears. They're in the, we had to move all the kids to the gym. There were so many there. And month goes by, numbers come right back to normal again. You know, once there's breathing room and we start to calm down a little bit, and there's no more planes hitting anything, and then they start, everyone gets up and they say God bless America and how, you know, we're united before God. They all get real religious when that happened. I don't know if you remember. And then it just, they get a breath and they harden their hearts and they won't listen, and that's what people do. But God's persistent. The Lord said unto Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and smite the dust of the land, that it might become lice throughout all the land of Egypt. Geb was the god of the earth. So now he's going after Geb. And he says, smite the dust of the land that it might become lice. This word kind of talks about like digging in. But it could be lice, could be mosquitoes, could be fleas, could be ticks. And it says, look at the next verse, they did so. Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod. He smote the dust of the earth. It became lice in man and in beast. All of the dust of the land became lice. How much dust is in Egypt? I'm thinking a lot. So, you know, I mean, doesn't it just make... There's something about lice, you know? And lice happens and it spreads around. And like half of you are already starting to do that. I see it because you just start to itch. You hear about it and then you itch it and then you think. And then, you know, I remember and a few years ago I had it run through some of the kids in children's ministry and we had to go through all of that stuff. And, you know, then you go home and you're like, okay. And your wife's saying, pick through my hair. And I say, pick through my hair because you just itch now. Just hearing about it makes you scratch and you got to. And it's one thing to have one of your kids or two of your kids or three of your kids get lice. It's another thing to have a nation get lice. Who'd you catch it from?
everybody, because it's on everybody. It's on Fido, it's on the horse, it's on everybody. Think we can let them go now? I think we could let them go. I would have let them go long before the lice. They didn't even get a warning about the lice. He just did it. And of course, the magicians did their best to make more lice. They but apparently there was no dirt left, and they couldn't. It says the magicians did so with their enchantments to bring forth lice, but mercifully they could not. So there were lice upon man and upon beast. And the magician said unto Pharaoh, "This is the finger of God. This is the real deal. We're not in the bush leagues anymore. Whatever this guy is doing, he's got something that we can't touch." And even when his staff comes to him, Pharaoh's heart was hardened, and he hearkened not unto them as the Lord had said. I guess the thing to remember as we go through this, and it's an odd place to stop because it's in the middle of, you know, we'll just let them scratch those lice for a week, and we'll come back when the flies come out. I don't know, what would I take more of, flies or lice? I mean, lice I don't like, but flies, I hate flies. Because at least lice can only crawl on you, but things that are going for like your nose and your mouth, black fly, I'll watch. If you show me on TV the telethon with the kids, all you have to show me, you don't have to be starving, just show me the flies on them, and I'll dig for the wallet every time, because that would be like torture to have flies on everything, you know. And I remember hearing Pastor Ken down there talking about going to the Sudan and eating there, and they, you know, big honor, he comes to this village, and so they make what he called whole goat soup, where they basically throw a whole goat in the pot, you know, just the whole thing, insides, outsides, hair, whatever else. And of course, he said the flies are just everywhere, just flies everywhere. And of course, there's open air latrine over there, so you know where they've been when they make it to your food. And just imagine everywhere. No, I mean, you just, there's no raid, there's no fly strips in Egypt. There's just, these are bad. I mean, these bad things happen to these people because one man was resisting God. And I guess the good news out of this is even though Pharaoh will not, there are some who will believe. And eventually will end up in with the people of God. The same thing when they come into the land of the Canaanites. Most people will reject, most of them, but there will be a Rahab who will hear and say, "We've heard about your God, and there's nothing like him. We're, you know, remember us when you come in." And she gets brought into the line of Christ and eventually the Messiah. So let's pray that those flies will descend upon the ravens and the patriots will be set free. Lord, it's horrible. I'm sorry. Lord, thank you so much, Father, that you are patient with man, that you are long-suffering, that you are able to deliver like you promised you would. And Lord, my prayer is that you would use whatever means necessary to get those people that we love, that you love more than us, who need to have a relationship with you. Lord, I don't like to see anybody suffer, but I'd rather see him suffer a little now than be lost eternally. Lord, thank you for getting our attention. Please, Lord, help us not to harden our heart. I ask in your name. Amen. Grace and peace, guys.